Welcome to What's Ailing the World. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth. I'm going to do a very short intro today because our very important guests and I have so much to talk about. Let me just mention my websites, reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com and drcarly.com. On the Reversing Vaccine Induced Diseases site, if you click on the Services tab, you will learn how I do consults. I also strongly suggest that all of you click on the Vaccine Induced Disease tab, download the diagrams that are there, four diagrams. The first one is a big picture, explains the cause of all disease, and listen to the conference that's posted below it of a lecture I gave in Chicago in 2008, explaining those diagrams, which no one can refute. Okay. If you support my work, any PayPal contributions are appreciated. I use contributions to obtain medical articles that you have to pay for and many, many books that I use in my research, because once you have a title like What's Ailing America or What's Ailing the World, the black hole that opens, it's never ending. But the most important thing is to recognize what the cause is, and we're going to be talking about that today. Always remember that negotiation and compromise with evil is impossible. And any of you that have questions or comments during the show, actually the easiest thing to do is just to go in the chat room and type in your comments or questions, and then the board ops can let us know what we need to address. And I think I'm going to leave it at that. Okay. My guest today is a regular contributor to the show, J.B. Campbell. I try to have him on at least once a month. J.B. Campbell was born in Chicago in 1946, grew up in Oak Brook, Illinois, and then the polo capital of the world. Graduated from Carmel High School in California, raced cars in Australia and England for 2 years, 3 years of college, mostly at the University of Nevada, Reno. Operated the School of Slide Control to train racing drivers and others the technique of slide control. Was a commercial diver in Texas and Louisiana for 2 years. Then he went into South Africa to be in the British South Africa Police in Rhodesia in the early 70s and was a section officer in the support unit, the anti-terrorist group. He was the first American in the in that outfit since 1923, and as we've discussed, that's when his eyes really became opened as to what's going on, just like when I went into the hospitals. Campbell started the modern militia movement in 1989 with his book, The New American Man, A Call to Arms. The militia movement lasted until 1995 with a state-sponsored destruction of the OKC federal building. The State Department considers him a mercenary. The FBI considers him a problem. The Secret Service considers him a terrorist. And he couldn't care less. And to me, he is a shining example of what happens when you stand up to these psychopaths. If you show them fear, they're going to get you to, you know, get down on your knees and lick their boots. But if you stand up to them and say, look, you are the terrorists, and you are not going to, you know, try to scare me, it's not going to work. And it's really amazing how that works out. And on today's show, amongst the problem causers, but first I want to get into the answer to today's question, what's ailing the world? Altering human consciousness. So welcome to the show, JB.
Thanks, Rebecca. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. And I would just like to, I did a show yesterday on Orion Talk Radio about this as well, this altering human consciousness. And I just want to quickly go through a list of some of the techniques that the psychopaths are using. Vaccines actually damage the brain and can lead to social violence and criminality, depending on the part of the brain that's damaged. Mercury, that's how we got the Mad Hatters, you know, about a century ago. The people that were making the felt hats that had the stiff brims, they were using mercury to do so, and they quote-unquote went mad. As I've discussed on the show before, MIT is studying how to use magnetic pulses to destroy your morality compass, basically. And one would have to ask the question, why on earth are they doing that? Okay. And of course, that brings into question, what is the other cause of all the people getting brain MRIs? Of course, we have psych drugs. We have scopolamine, which is a very dangerous drug that actually allows you to look normal, but actually you lose your free will. If some burglar blows it in your face and then tells you to give them all the money out of your bank account, you will do so while looking totally normal. And much to my amazement, I have in front of me hearings from Congress in August 1977 on Project MKUltra, the CIA's program of research and behavioral modification, and it was even mentioned by the testimony of one of the minions that scopolamine was in fact part of Project Chatter, which came before Project Bluebird, and they keep changing the name, but we know the same thing is going on. And then we have the Manchurian Candidate program, which is a little different from MKUltra in that it largely involves hypnosis, but you know, what we have to face is the fact that all of these psychopaths, and of course almost every one of them is a Jew, are actually trying to find ways to alter our consciousness. And of course, we can add to the list, which I didn't get to yesterday, even music. By making music disharmonious, it can actually cause people to become altered consciously. And in fact, there was a song called Gloomy Sunday that was written back in like the around the time of World War II that actually caused people to commit suicide. So there's so many ways they are playing with our brains. Oh, and let's also mention HAARP and chemtrails. And so this is what people have to face. I mean, if you're able to even think logically and use critical thinking, that's a miracle in itself. And you must have developed some way to avoid a lot of these things and or detox things that are causing you a problem. Or maybe you have a genetic ability to fight this off. But as we were corresponding for this show, I was amazed that you had written to me, which I was not aware of previously, that in fact you have done pieces about McVeigh's roommate, Mike Gadbaugh, that your wife, Robbie, who is a medical doctor, had rescued him from the assassination program, that in fact, apparently, he was sent into Democrat leader, traitor Harry Reid's residence, apparently to assassinate him, and it was thanks to the fact that he actually called your wife and asked, like, who is this guy? And she asked him, why are you there? And he said, I don't know. And she told him to get away from there, and he did. So that didn't happen. But I would like you, if you would, to please tell a little bit about that situation, because that was really amazing. And isn't it funny how, you know, Harry Reid, he's got to know what's going on with all these MKUltra assassination robots and things of that nature. He was in Congress when all this was going down. And so he knows about it. I'm sure he signed up for it, and then they use it on him, and then or attempt to. And then, as I always say, evil is evil even to its own. So please take it away.
Well, Robbie and I were introduced in 2002 by a guy in Phoenix named Brian Quigg, who's kind of an investigative reporter, centric. But he said, as soon as he introduced us, he said, now we have to go out to Kingman, Arizona, and meet this guy, McVeigh's roommate. I said, well, no, I don't, not really not that into it. No. He said, you have to meet this guy. It's really important. Okay, so we went to Kingman, and we went to McVeigh's house, this adobe out in the Golden Valley part of Kingman. And there was this fellow in there named Mike Gadbaugh, and he was very reluctant to talk to us, especially to Brian, because Brian was kind of abrasive, and he didn't want to talk to Brian. But when he saw Robbie, and he was told that she was a doctor, well, okay, you let us in the place. And so one thing led to another, and it turned out that he was an MK Ultra mind control guy, just like McVeigh. And it was very difficult for Robbie to come to terms with this. I mean, she didn't know that much about mind control, but she understood there's something wrong with this guy, and that he had this dissociative behavior, and the prescriptions he was on from the VA were keeping him in this altered state. They called him seizure disorder housebound. Seizure disorder housebound. He had experienced a grand mal seizure at the University of Minnesota in 1981 or 82, somewhere. Now, I have the videotape here of Mike lying in a bed in an obviously clinical setting with some technicians kind of ministering to him, and he had electrodes on his head and on his chest. He had a, you know, hospital gown on. He was sitting there quietly, and apparently he says he was watching violent films of war scenes, flashing, you know, quick cuts in these gory war scenes. And he was being given the drug ketamine, which is a dissociative drug, which will mess your mind up. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, on this videotape, half of it was Mike lying in the bed, and the other half of it was his EKG in real time, according to what we were seeing on the other half of him lying there. All of a sudden, the EKG starts going crazy, and he suffered a grand mal seizure. And I asked him if he'd ever, was he an epileptic? He said, no, I never had a seizure before then. And it turned out he'd never had one since then. But that one incident labeled him as a seizure disorder housebound by the VA.
I would just like to point something out to you, and please ask Robbie if she would agree with me, you know, after the show. The fact that the EKG went crazy, that tells me that he was actually given an electroshock, that the electrodes on his brain were delivering a shock, and that's why the EKG went crazy, because there was a surge of electricity throughout his whole body. If it was just seizure activity in the brain, the EKG may show some, you know, premature heartbeats or things like that, but it shouldn't go crazy. So sounds to me like they were actually delivering electroshocks to him through the electrodes, pretending that they were monitoring the brain activity with the electrodes. But go ahead.
So it turned out that this experiment, and there were, I don't know, 10, maybe 10 people, veterans or military people, in this program with him.
Mm-hmm.
And it went on for 90 days, I believe. I think that's what he said. And it was run by the infamous Louis Jolyon West.
Yes. Who
you know, was headquartered at the University of Minnesota for many years. And then he went, I guess, to UCLA after that. And he was one of the fathers of the MKUltra program.
Exactly.
But
yes.
Gottlieb and West.
If I could just ask you, did he know what kind of a program he was, quote-unquote, volunteering for? What did they tell him he was there for?
No, he had no idea. He had suffered headaches, migraines, from the time that he got hit in the head on a ship off Vietnam. He was in the Navy. I believe an empty cartridge casing came out and hit him on the head. And from then on, he had headaches. So he went to a psychiatrist in Minnesota, where he was from, and she interviewed him and finally said, well, why don't you, we have an interesting program that you might like to be part of, and, you know, maybe we can get to the bottom of your medical problem with this program. Well, they didn't give a damn about his medical problem. They just wanted him and these other people into this experimental situation. It was like the Ypres file. Have you ever saw that Michael Caine movie back in the 60s? These flashing scenes and stress induced, plus the drugs. And as you say, I'm sure there was electroshock involved as well. Cut off. But anyway, long story short, Robbie spent a lot of time with him trying to get him rehabilitated. And as you said, he did call her one time. She was back in Phoenix, or I think she was in Phoenix, and he called. He said, who is Harry Reid? He said, why? Well, I'm at his compound here in Searchlight, Nevada. He said, well, "Why? Why are you there?" I said, I don't know. "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm not sure." Now, the problem was, for me personally, was that there are two things going on here. I had invented a landmine-resistant vehicle, and my partner was living in Las Vegas, so he invited me to come to Las Vegas, and so let's do it here. And Harry Reid got involved in the program, and he was the sponsor for this landmine-resistant vehicle that I had invented. So it was kind of ironic. I was pretty much in business with Harry Reid, not really knowing the guy,
right?
But he was sponsoring this thing with the Army. Well, at the same time, I had persuaded Mike Gadbaugh to get rid of his cheap Lee Harvey Oswald type guns. He had some cheap junk that he mysteriously bought, and the police had been to his place numerous times and had always been checking on his guns, making sure he had these guns, and always marking down the serial numbers. So I said, "Well, Mike, you need to get rid of those guns." He said, "Why?" "Well, because they apparently want you to have them." Does Lee Harvey Oswald make any, ring a bell to you?
Yeah.
"Well, I don't want to get rid of them." I said, "You need to get rid of them right away. I mean, I'll give you something to protect yourself." And here's where I nearly came very short. I gave him an old Colt 1917 45 revolver, which he had with him at Harry Reid's compound. And he could have used my gun to kill Harry Reid. Now, remember, some Democrats at this time, and shortly before this, had resisted Bush's war plans, like Tom Daschle and Leahy, Harry Reid, and especially Paul Wellstone. Well, Paul Wellstone was killed. Daschle and Leahy got the anthrax in their offices.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Gadbaugh was sent to kill Harry Reid. Of course, Harry Reid did a big turnaround, mm-hmm. apparently, and got religion and supported the war program.
Right.
But this was just something that could have happened, And Robbie said, "Well, she wasn't really sure who Harry Reid was herself, but she said, he's a politician, he's like a senator or something." Mm-hmm. "Well, you need to leave there." "Okay. No, I mean, you need to leave there right now." And he did. But you talk about a close call. That was a very bad situation.
Right. Not to mention the fact that you're at this place. You don't know how you got there. You don't know why you're there. I'm just curious. Did he have any self-awareness of the fact that he must be used for this MKUltra program, even if he didn't know exactly what it was called or whatever? Did he realize they were using him as a covert assassin? Just like you said with Lee Harvey Oswald, although that's a whole scam anyways that he killed Kennedy, but just the point of they need to have a sacrificial lamb so that they can, blame somebody. And then, of course, they would take him out in a field of gunfire or whatever, and that would be the end of it. But did he know?
Yeah, he finally got the idea. He was very reluctant to accept our theories, and the things we were offering to him, why he was undergoing these terrible experiences. But he finally did admit that was apparently what was happening and what had happened to him all since the 1980s. He was being groomed as another assassin. But there are, I believe that there are thousands of these people walking around. He's just one of many.
Exactly.
But yes, he did finally accept the fact that he had been programmed.
Okay, and in the email that you sent me, you mentioned, and I think you just mentioned it recently as you're talking on the show, about the fact that this Mike Gadbaugh was an experimental program in neuroscience at the University of Minnesota. Now, that brings us to the Colorado shooter, who was also a PhD candidate in an experimental program in neuroscience. And I talked about that a lot yesterday on my show. I'm not going to get into that too much, except to say another little, link in the chain as you connect the dots that I received a couple of days ago in regards to the fact that the father of this James Holmes actually, according to this document that I received on, from 4winds10.net. The father of this alleged, you know, shooter, which obviously he was a Manchurian candidate. I mean, it was so clear to me when I first heard about it. But Daddy Holmes, named Robert, was actually educated at the University of California, Berkeley, and Stanford. Is currently the senior lead scientist with the American Credit Score Company, otherwise known as FICO, and the massive banking crime being investigated by the U.S. Senate called the LIBOR scandal, which, by the way, the Federal Reserve has known about for over 4 years and didn't report it. Apparently, his father was getting ready to come and testify in Congress about this LIBOR scandal. So isn't it amazing that right before this whole congressional testimony happens, his son is involved in this massive massacre?
Yeah, I'm sure he's involved, but I'm not sure he did it. There's really no, I mean, nobody saw the guy because he was covered up with these crazy costumes he was wearing. And I don't know. It's just, you know, another one of these tangled webs at the CIA. It's a CIA operation. There's no question in my mind.
Right. Well, whether he is, I mean, obviously he's got to be a Manchurian candidate to do something like this. The fact that his apartment was allegedly, booby-trapped with 60 bombs and all this high-level stuff that he would have no possible way of knowing how to do. What I think happened in terms of the apartment situation was that when the police were climbing through the window, they were coming in, bringing in explosives that they could then bring out and, you know, explode for the media to capture. But whether he was a Manchurian candidate and he did it, or whether he's just a Lee Harvey Oswald, it's basically apparently the same purpose. Well, there's many layers always. Distraction, massive trauma of the citizens, you know, as they're playing this out on the media 24/7, all the tragic stories of we've got another young girl, 6 years old, what the hell is she doing at the movie at midnight, but whatever. So whatever the true, web behind it is, apparently, I just find it very interesting that it may possibly be involved with the fact that his father was getting ready to testify about this LIBOR scandal, because he actually had helped develop the software that uncovered it.
Yeah. Well, it's just it's all connected. Everything's connected. You know, there's always this connection.
Right.
I didn't finish about Gadbaugh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wrote two pieces about him, and I was going to write the third, but the two articles that I wrote were so frightening, I guess, that our friends wouldn't even comment on them. Nobody would ever say a word about them because they were so disturbing. So I just never got around to writing the third one because I didn't think it was going to, you know, what's the point? More scare stuff. But Mike kept thinking he could finesse the VA. And the VA was, of course, behind this whole thing. The VA doctors were running him and controlling him and drugging him and keeping him under this seizure disorder housebound limitation. He couldn't drive. Well, I bought him a car. Robbie and I both taught him how to drive, and he became quite independent. So much so that he was driving around Prescott, and he got busted and taken to the jail and beaten quite severely. He had to go to emergency. He had blood in his urine. The beating was pretty severe. And one of these sadistic deputies that was beating him was laughing and saying, "This is for your effing trashy friends in Vegas," meaning Robbie and me. We were married at that point, living in Las Vegas. He got beaten up pretty badly. And then...
let me just clarify. His crime that he got busted for was driving without a license, right?
No, he was licensed. It was... He drove. We kept telling him to stay away from the VA. Robbie kept saying, "Don't ever go back to the VA." And he called one time and said, I don't have an apartment right now. I'm going to move into the VA for a few weeks and get a place to live. And Bobby said, are you insane? No, you can't trick them that way. So he signed up for this 90-day program, and they ordered him to divest himself of his own post office box. He was not allowed any contact with his doctor, meaning Robbie. And they had some other rules. He had to move into the dormitory there. They call it a domicary, kind of a funny word, like dormitory-commissary combination.
Right.
In something called Hillside. It was a sinister program. But he was being signed in by the nurse. She looked at his address and said, that's Timothy McVeigh's address. I'll never forget it. He nodded. He said, he was here. He was here, too. He did a 90-day program with us, too.
Oh, red flag.
Great caddy and nice. I told this to J.D. Cash before he died, and he said, oh, that's garbage. He said, we've got McVeigh's movements documented, and there's no missing 90-day period. Well, I said, I don't know if you do or not. But this nurse happily told Mike that McVeigh did a 90-day program at Hillside. Anyway, he got scared and bugged out. But unfortunately, was driving around Prescott, Arizona one evening and pulled into the VA parking lot to turn around. It was like it was drawing him. He was a magnet. He pulled in, he said, to make a U-turn, and they got busted in there. They got him for DUI and introducing explosives onto a federal property. He had a shotgun shell that was rolling around in the back of his pickup.
Oh, geez.
So that was a major crime. And even attempted suicide after that. This was going to be in part three. Somehow, he called Robbie and told her that he was going to commit suicide in a few minutes, which apparently he did do, but she reported it right away and got the sheriff's to where she thought he might be parked in his car, his truck, and he survived. He woke up, he'd taken this sandwich of amphetamines or some bunch of prescription drugs and attempted an overdose. Left a will, leaving everything to me and Robbie, but survived the thing. And he was going to be, weeks later, he told me he was going to go on the run. I said, no. He said, you can beat this DUI because they have no evidence. You weren't under the influence. I'm sure you can beat it, but do not become a fugitive. So he finally went to court. On his way into the courtroom, he was pulled aside by this guy with a shaved head and a three-piece suit and said, come on in here, Mike. I want to talk to you first. Dragged him into this side room and said, look, Mike, we know you've been having a real hard time. We can make this all go away. We'll drop all the charges. All we need from you is an affidavit that you will not have anything more to do with Campbell or his wife, Dr. Borgeson. And he said, okay. So he signed the affidavit, and he called us up. He said, this is the last time I can talk to you. They told me I could tell you that I'm not going to have any more to do with you. I said, okay, fine, Mike. That's fine, whatever. To me, it was a great relief because Robbie nearly got killed several times being with him. I probably got zapped. I got zapped pretty hard at his place in Golden Valley by microwave. So I was relieved not to have anything more to do with the guy. But that's the extent of these people.
You don't know whatever ultimately happened to him or if he's even still alive.
I believe he's okay. I believe, because see, my two articles about him completely neutralized their hold on him as an assassin, because no matter what he did after these articles came out, and they were widespread, they went into every single website around the world.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, they were very popular. It's scary because my friends would never even comment on them. But it exonerated him, no matter what he did. Based on those articles, his usefulness to them was over. So, the last we heard several years ago, he'd become a cowboy and changed his lifestyle completely and got out into the you know, out into the outdoors. So let's hope it had a happy ending.
And I'm sure away from the VA, because, see, that's the hardest thing for especially, you know, soldiers to face the fact that, first of all, they're used as cannon fodder in these Jew wars, and then after they come back, they think they're getting, quote-unquote, free medical care, and in fact, it's just the experimentation, you know, commencing. And I think it's wonderful what you did for him, and of course, you and I encounter the same problem is, you know, as I talk about more and more bioweapon vaccines and the true intention and now this tweaked rabies that's causing cannibals, people of conscience can't even conceive of such evil existing. So it's almost to the point they don't want to know about it, but you do have the solution, and the solution is getting rid of the problem, and the problem are the Jews. And in your latest essay on your blog, J.B. Campbell, ExtremismOnline.com, on July 8th, you write about the Jew fighters. And I just want to just give a brief overview of this because it's so outstanding. You ask the question, is there any aspect of our downfall that is not Jewish-directed? All of our wars are designed and run by Jews. The two political parties are controlled by Jews through the Jewish political funding agency known as AIPAC. The president and his executive branch are controlled by Jews through foreign and domestic policies created by the Council on Foreign Relations. Law enforcement is controlled by Jews via the Anti-Defamation League and the Southern Poverty Law Center, now part of the Department of Homeland Security. Our money and credit are supplied to us by Jews who own the Federal Reserve. And of course, now we have another level to the theft and fraud with this massive LIBOR scandal. It's just amazing as to how creative they are in finding ways to steal everything we have. Our information and entertainment, virtually indistinguishable, are supplied to us by Jews. And so you have proposed something called Defense Against Jewish Aggression, or DAJA, which has a sort of exotic and scary sound, as it should, and you think that DAJA is a legitimate proposal for self-defense. It is an idea whose time has come. Anyone who joins DAJA or helps in any way will be a Jew fighter, but my favorite part is that you say the slogan should be, you're either with us or you're with the Jews. I would say you're either with humanity or you're with the psychopaths, but it's a funny turnaround, a spin, when George Bush, you know, got on camera and said, you're either with us or you're with the terrorists. Well, he was part of the terrorists. Those are the Jews. So please continue based on this excellent idea.
Yeah, well, I mean, every aspect of our lives comes through the Jewish filter. There's nothing that we can consume, and I mean, even technically, you know, literally consume, everything has to be, have the kosher label, including our food. Now, most Gentiles are not aware of this kosher labeling scam, you know, just as a tiny example of the control that they have over us. We pay an enormous tax to a consortium of rabbis. Who, you know, give the little circle U or the C, or K rather, and the circle K, little symbols on all packaged foods, canned foods, bagged foods. It all has to have the Jewish seal, which means the rabbis get a tremendous amount of money, but unknown amount of money. If you call up, one of the food producers, and say, listen, how much extra is it costing for this K on your package? Well, they will hang up on you. Or they will just say, it's classified, or it's private, proprietary.
It's national
whatever.
Security, right, okay.
You know, you're not going to find out. But what an unbelievable situation that we should have to pay rabbis to put their stupid little symbol on all our food packaging. They have to pay a tax to these outlaws. I mean, it's a tiny example of the control. I mean, obviously, news and entertainment, it's totally Jewish run. Banking, totally Jewish run. Everything. There's nothing in our lives that is not controlled by Jews. I mean,
exactly.
Who can deny this?
Nobody.
Who can deny it?
Nobody, but let me say, if you call into C-SPAN and you say that, they will call you an anti-Semite, a hater, and they will hang up on you.
Yeah, that's the control. It's total control by Jews over everything. Now, I mean, even the get back to Gadbaugh, you know, he was controlled by Louis Jolyon West. Well, West was not his real name. He was a Russian Jew. And Gottlieb, you know, was the other founder of MKUltra. Gottlieb and whatever West's real name was. Kind of hard to find out, but you look at Louis Jolyon West, you find out his parents came from, they were Russian Jews. There's nothing unusual. This is if it's about psychiatry, it's about mind control, it's Jewish. I mean, when Freud came over to America back in the early 1900s on a visit, and he had his fellow Jewish therapists on the ship with him coming over from Austria, they gathered on the deck, and he was talking to them and said, you know, the Americans think we're bringing them a panacea with therapy, you know. He said, what we're bringing them is a plague. And that's what they've done. These people have given us a plague, not only of mind control. Well, it is total, I mean, I must say, that's the issue here. It's total Jewish mind control that we're under. Now, how do we break this? Well, there's no peaceful way to break it. There's no legal way to break it. It's not against the law what they've done, because they own the law. I mean, the law is a Jewish plot. It's completely run by Jews, Jewish judges, Jewish attorneys. The Anti-Defamation League controls the law. The Southern Poverty Law Center is all Jewish. It controls the law. Now, what choice do we have? We have to destroy these people. It's like the movie They Live. They look human, but there's something underneath them that is so alien and so ugly and so demented and destructive that they have to be destroyed. They cannot coexist with these aliens among us. So that's my message.
Okay, and before you continue on that, I just want to mention I have so many books on mind control and things of that nature. But to the listeners that want to read about Dr. Louis Jolyon West, he's actually featured in the book The CIA Doctors, Human Rights Violations by American Psychiatrists by Colin A. Ross, M.D. They have a whole chapter of him in here. And I just want to read some of the papers that he's published. Sleep deprivation, LSD, its effects on the male Asiatic elephant. This guy was given LSD to elephants, okay? That's, like, insane. Brainwashing, hypnosis, and experimental psychopathology, sensory isolation, monkeys in brainwashing, psychiatry, brainwashing, and the American character, brainwashing, conditioning, and debility, dependency, and dread, dissociative reaction, hallucinogens, psychobiology of racial violence. So that just goes to show they're trying to foment, you know, racial violence to distract from who the bad guys are. Flight from violence, hippies in the Green Rebellion, campus unrest in the counterculture, contemporary cults, cults, liberty, and mind control, and persuasive techniques in contemporary cults. So just reading the list of his publication makes it quite obvious that he was all about finding out not only how to cause brainwashing and mind control, but how to also use that to, you know, distract from who the real terrorists are. And it's amazing. Just like you said, you forgot to mention in the legal arena, the district attorneys, of course, because they are the gatekeepers to who actually gets charged with a crime in the first place. And if by some chance, should there be a public outcry or something in certain situations, and the district attorneys feel pressured to actually charge somebody that's committing crimes against humanity with a crime, they still have all their techniques like suppression of evidence. And, you know, it always amazes me when I sometimes watch some of these NCIS shows and things of that nature. You know, they'll refuse to allow entry into the record. If somebody's murdered 15 people in the past, you can't let that come onto the record because that could be prejudicial. I mean, these are some of the insane tactics that they have come up with to totally control everything. Who's charged with a crime, who's convicted of a crime, and you know, what a crime even is. Because how could these people not have been charged with committing crimes against humanity? Like you said, your associate had no idea what was even going on. He had to figure it out. Eventually, it becomes self-evident when you find yourself in somebody's house with a loaded weapon and you don't know why you're there. But, you know, where was the informed consent on that one?
Yeah, you look at Jolyon West. I mean, he was the guy, in fact, I think one of the first guys to interview Jack Ruby and said there was no conspiracy. He interviewed Sirhan and said there was no conspiracy. Now, once Timothy McVeigh was arrested, you know, the initial reports, he said, well, I got an implant in my rear end, and I'm under the control of Louis Jolyon West. And then you remember Chandra Levy, the intern. She was working for the Bureau of Prisons, and she apparently recorded something like 18 visits by Louis Jolyon West to Timothy McVeigh while he was kept at El Reno prison in Oklahoma in the initial stages. So, and she, of course, she died under kind of mysterious circumstances. And then Jolyon West died. I think his usefulness had come to an end. Anyway, he was involved in every major assassination, and he was running Mike Gadbaugh. Now, I mean, we found this out. Mike asked his grandmother, kindly little old lady who worked at the University of Minnesota as a telephone operator, and he said, "Grandma, who was the doctor in charge of my program?" She was there. I mean, she was there when he was doing his mind control experiment.
Wow.
And she said, "Oh, you mean Dr. West? He used to use my telephone. He didn't want to use his telephone in his office. He just used my telephone directly." But that blew Mike's mind right there. He said, "Oh, my God, I had no idea." And even his father was involved in this conspiracy against Mike. His father was a doctor, and he was working with the VA against Mike, keeping him under control for all these years. So Mike really was up against it. The family was involved, VA. I mean, it's a miracle that we pulled him out of that thing in one piece. It was mainly Robbie. She did it. She got him out of there.
Well, and that's what's so disgusting, is that through threats, coercion, or getting people to sell their souls for cash, you know, this is one of the major problems that we confront. How many people are willing to even sell off their own family members, either because of threats or to get cash or whatever the case may be? That is really mind-blowing. And for him to even survive that, knowing psychologically, that's a big one.
It is. Just, you know, I think a lot of it is the willingness to defend yourself. Most people in this country, like those people in the theater and in Luby's cafeteria and wherever these mass murderers take off and start killing, Americans have been disarmed mentally. We've got all the guns in the world, but there's something wrong with our minds. And we have been disarmed so that we cannot defend ourselves for some reason. It's the ultimate mind control. So Mike, though, was known to be armed. I armed him, and he was pretty angry.
Understandably.
So this goes a long way. I mean, this doesn't mean to say that an assassin can't get you no matter what kind of gun you got on him. I mean, this is true. But when you're willing to defend yourself and you make it known that you're going to fight at the drop of a hat, and what really wrecked them was the Waco the initial Waco invasion by the ATF, when those people, those eccentric people in the church, fought back, that was totally unexpected. That was something that set the whole police state back on its, it rocked them on their heels.
Right.
But they don't want that to happen again. They don't want that ever to happen again. We've got to be disarmed mentally so we won't fight back. Well, if you're willing to fight back, and I mean kill, cops, soldiers, Marines, whatever, Blackwater.
Whoever is threatening your life.
Pardon?
Whoever is threatening your life. You see, it's not called killing in that situation. It's called defending yourself. You have to be willing to defend yourself. And I just want to comment on the Waco thing. Of course, that's why they had to cause the horror that they caused, where the people were burned alive. You know, they had to send out a very strong message that, you know, we're not going to tolerate anybody standing up to us.
That's true. I mean, there's no question that they responded to this, as you said. But the wonderful thing about that whole thing was the initial fighting back by these people, killing four bat fags right off the bat, and then well, I don't know how many they wounded, and so much so that these treacherous bastards had raised their hands and said, please, can we come in and collect our dead and wounded?
Yeah,
and
right.
Of course, the Christian disease got to these people, and they said, well, okay. Now, they should have wiped them out. You know, 51 days later, we see what should have happened. I mean, what was the point of letting anything nice happen? Might as well kill them all right now.
Right.
Because you can see where it's going to go. That, you know, that was the most instructive lesson we've had in recent times in this country. Waco. We got to remember Waco, both the beginning part of it and the end part of it.
And even the psyops involved, I want to just underline what you just said because it's so important. These terrorists were assaulting their compound, and they did defend themselves, and then they used like a psychological weapon of religion of trying to get them to do the right thing. Oh, let us collect our dead and wounded. I mean, you know, where does it happen, like in war? Do we have a stop of action so that we can clear off the dead off the field and then we start again? I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. Now, what I'm saying is, there are going to be ambushes, there are going to be roadblocks, there are going to be home invasions. This is what's coming. We got drones. They're probably going to be attacking us from the skies with all the weapons that they're Raytheon and whoever Boeing are dreaming up for us.
Mm-hmm.
So, the human nature is that we're going to wait for something to happen. But I'm saying, okay, as soon as something happens, though, we have to go downtown and start killing anybody who's involved in the decision to send these people against us. This is how we fight back. We just don't fight back at home. You know, it's difficult to win a gunfight at home because you're surrounded. So you got to get out. You got to shoot your way out and then get down to where the decision makers are living, whether it's in your own town, your own city, your own county, whatever. But make your list first. Prepare your list of who are these decision makers? Who are the people who are likely to be sending thugs and killers against us? Make your list. And you shoot your way out of the ambush. You know, when you get ambushed, I was in ambushes over in Africa, and we had a policy. The only way out is to shoot your way out. You cannot hide. A kill zone has been prepared. If the gunfire starts, you had to know immediately that you're in a kill zone. We used to do immediate action drills. After every patrol, we do immediate action drills. We'd learn to charge the ambush. It's the only way out. You got to charge it. You got to shoot. And, you know, you might make it, you might not. But if you stay there, if you try to hide, there's no place to hide in a kill zone. So you gotta suck it up and head for the gunfire and shoot, 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 shoot. If you make it, then you go refer to your list. And then you start finding the people who sent these killers for you. This is how we're gonna win this thing. We gotta start thinking big and stop thinking like a bunch of sheep going to the slaughter. We gotta start thinking like Americans, whatever that means.
Stop believing that you can negotiate with these people, that you can put up the white flag, you know, and that all of a sudden they're going to say, okay, you know, these are our terms, you know, give us all your money, your food, your children, whatever. You can't negotiate with terrorists either. And getting back to the whole Colorado situation, one thing I also just wanted to mention that Americans need to realize, they said that there were no police in that theater. Now, I learned what was going on with the police when I lived in Florida. There was a zoo that all of a sudden decided that they were going to sell liquor on the premises. And what happened? It turned out there were off-duty police working within the zoo. They would monitor who was there drinking, and especially monitor who was there drinking that had their children with them. And when these people left the zoo, they would be, you know, obviously the insider cop is communicating with the cops on the street, just sitting there like predators waiting to arrest people for DWI. But what made that especially heinous was that they took away their children. So not only did they get to, you know, put the people in prison for DWI or suck them into the process, you know, of having to hire a lawyer and all the rest of the crap that entails, but they also took their children. So when I heard also that there were no police in the theater, because that's one of the main places the cops work, off-duty. They're everywhere. They're working off-duty everywhere, in restaurants, in theaters, any place that they can go so they can set up a potential arrest situation after the person leaves. So why weren't there any cops in that theater? And that just goes to show, again, that this was definitely a planned event.
Yeah, I agree.
So I know that, like we've talked about before on the show, it's very hard to actually start an actual organization because it immediately gets infiltrated with provocateurs and troublemakers, etc. But your whole idea of this DAJA, you know, Defense Against Jewish Aggression, I think people have to, you know, read that latest essay that you wrote on, let's see, July 8th on J.B. Campbell ExtremismOnline.com and get this idea circulating, because, you know, we keep hearing about the terrorists. Well, we know who the terrorists are, okay? And our government is in league with the terrorists. In fact, we now have Romney going to Israel to play, you know, whatever, with Netanyahu. You know, doesn't matter which president we get. They're both Zionists. It's quite obvious to me. So what can Americans do? You said we have to figure out who's who in the zoo at the local level, especially who is the sheriff. Is the sheriff a Mason? Because the counties that have sheriffs as Masons or Masonic sheriffs, obviously they're in much higher danger than sheriffs who purport that they're going to keep their oath. But what can people do in terms of forming a plan to go against this aggression? Because, as you say, they control everything.
Well, it's what you call a target-rich environment. But we just have to be... We have to be discriminating and not get involved with small-time Jews and the minor characters of the federal bureaucracy and the local police. I mean, you have to go against the decision-makers. Now, my whole thing in life is the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yes.
This is all I care about. You know, there are lots of clones, there's lots of bad guys. But I'm concerned with the ones who have been making our policy since 1921, and even before that, before they actually formed their little group. But formally, they've been making our foreign and domestic policy since 1921. So my concern is the destruction of the Council on Foreign Relations. But there are many others. There's the Anti-Defamation League. There's the Southern Poverty Law Center. There's the entire Justice Department is a Jewish nest of the den of iniquity. So It's all designed to destroy us. And we can, you know, just think it out and make our list of people we want to get. As soon as they're, because the American tendency, the mentality is to, you know, hit after you've been hit first. Americans don't want to be the bad guy. Okay. I mean, figure out what it's going to take. You know, at what stage you're going to say, fine, that's it. I'm ready. I'm going to go now. I'm going to go get these guys. You don't have to get everybody. Just get somebody. But somebody important. This is the American way. Let's use our can-do American mentality for something useful for once instead of just whatever we've been doing all these years. I mean, Americans are different. You know, I'm not saying they're good, but they're different. Now, we have to become good. And the way to do that is to be willing to kill the aggressors. And most of the aggressors are either Jews or run by Jews. And that's just, you know, I got to keep it pretty simple.
Well, I'm just trying to
free up our minds to this
right.
extent.
To make it a little bit more palatable, because of that kill word, I know that some people, it's like, you know, thou shalt not kill. Okay. But see, the problem is people have to realize is if you kill somebody who's threatening your life, your liberty, your family, your very existence, and even possibly causing the extinction of humanity, that's called self-defense. So I would just use that word self-defense. You see, you know, you can't tell an animal in the wild, you know, if it's young or being threatened by some predator, that, no, you can't do anything to stop the predator. You know, you have to go to court or whatever. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. And that's actually the whole basis of a book in my library called The Biology of Aggression. It's a book published by NATO's Life Sciences Division. And in it, it has all kinds of experiments that they've been doing forever to both cause aggression when they want aggression, you know, the microchip that makes you become, you know, postal or whatever. There's so many ways that they can do that. The Manchurian Candidate is another. But the other thing that people don't talk about is they've been doing everything they can to remove the natural aggression that, say, a parent would have for a predator who threatens its young. And we see this all the time. And, of course, that's one of the reasons that men have been demasculated through all kinds of synthetic estrogens in the water, you know, getting them to go to the games instead of getting involved with their families and things of that nature. You know, the men are supposed to be the protectors. They're supposed to protect their families. But yet, instead, you know, if some anonymous phone call comes into CPS and they're told they have to come to court, where in most cases the children will be ripped out of their hands, put into foster care, while you prove that you are a good parent, you know, people just go along with this. And this has to stop.
Yeah, you know, I started the militia movement on a radio station in Alaska back in 88 and 89. That's how the militia movement got started, was the radio interviews I did on AEAG in Anchorage, even though I was in California. The FBI thought at first I was in the studio, and they came to the studio to get me. I finally realized that I was, you know, not in Alaska at the time. But people up there, this is before the Internet, of course, guys up there would send me tapes of the shows. Then they started sending me tapes of the other shows that were on this station. And they said, what do you think about this one? And what happened was a whole community outside of Anchorage, 80 families had their children taken away from them by the Child Protective Services, and they disappeared. The children were gone. And I listened to this show by tape, you know, and I just thought, oh my God, this is 1989. And this has been going on. This whole town had objected to something the government was doing. I think it was kind of a military community, like Elmendorf Air Force Base, as I recall. And these people had objected to what was going on, and to punish them, they had their children stolen from them. So
I can relate to that. Kansas City, Alaska.
Pardon?
I can relate to that. That's what they did to me. You see, and that's what they do. And this is the ultimate in evil. And you know, the fact that people aren't rising up in this country over this just blows my mind. Because not only are they stealing the children, but they're using them for child trafficking, child pornography, you know, very satanic things. And then it turned out,
you know, the investigation showed that the local judges in Anchorage were part of this pedophilic ring. And they were using, they were getting the children every Thursday from the juvenile hall. And some of them were brought to the judges' chambers. This all came out in court in Anchorage. The police were providing the children to the judges. Oh, it was just beyond comprehension. But, you know, I don't believe in talking about the problem without a solution. So my solution, of course, always is to kill whoever is doing this immediately. I mean, what's the point of living under these conditions?
Right.
You got to make this thing better. You got to leave this place better than we found it.
Right. And I totally agree with you. I just say kill because that's called self-defense. How can you allow this to happen? You know, you're committing an atrocity yourself if you're going to allow your children to be put under such conditions. I mean, it's just mind-boggling. And why would you do nothing? Out of fear? Because they've paid you off? Or what is the reason? You know, and that's what people have to realize. It's called self-defense. And when you're in the self-defense mode, and I'm not even saying to wait, because if it's happening all around you, then to prevent it from happening to you, you have to go on the offense. In that case, offense is self-defense because you already see what's happening.
Yeah, now the famous example of this was the Nebraska case that was described by John DeCamp, the Franklin cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the complicated part about that one was that John DeCamp himself, while I believe he was sincere in his efforts to save the children, and he was, I don't, you know, doubt that part of it. But John DeCamp was part of the Phoenix program in Vietnam. He was a killer for William Colby.
Killing
thousands and thousands of Vietnamese people as a member of the Special Forces back in the 1960s and 70s. So it gets kind of complicated when, and then of course John DeCamp, you know, is an attorney besides being a state senator for Nebraska. He was representing the Trockmans in Montana, and I was associated with the Trockmans up there in the militia of Montana until I found out the Trockmans are an FBI sting operation. The militia of Montana was an FBI sting operation. And John DeCamp is their main defender. So it gets complicated. You got to be prepared for that.
Well, I wouldn't say complicated so much as people can do something that appears to be good to hide the fact of what they've done in the past or what might be continuing to do. And I always ask myself, you know, that's pretty high-level stuff. Last I heard, John DeCamp, I think he's 71 years old now. He was still alive, last I heard, although he did an interview on Alex Jones where he said he was going to the hospital for something. So who knows if they'll just take care of him while he's in the hospital. But, yeah, you have to question everything and everybody. You know, where is this conscience coming from? He killed people in Vietnam in massive numbers, but now he's going to go after people in the U.S. that are doing bad things to children. I mean, that is very strange.
And he only went so far. I mean, we knew that the children in Omaha were being supplied to George Bush and those guys in the White House. But John DeCamp, you read the book, and I read it very carefully. I was in a state of shock over that book. And Louis Beam and I were looking for the NAMBLA chapter down in L.A. with our shotguns So all we wanted to do was find this NAMBLA, this North American Man-Boy Love Association. Find it. We were on the hunt for it. We couldn't find it. It's so well protected. But we were going to take our shotguns in there and wipe them out. The only thing you can do. Couldn't find the damn place. But DeCamp just went so far. He described the basic problem, but he protected the guys in D.C. But the word DeCamp came to my attention first was the wonderful book by David Hoffman, The Oklahoma City Bombing and the Politics of Terror, which you can get online now. It was ordered destroyed by the federal government after it came out. It's so powerful. I don't know if I've ever heard of another book being ordered pulped, as they say. But anyway, in the book, David Hoffman quotes William Colby in a letter to his former associate, John DeCamp, saying that the militia movement is much more dangerous than the anti-war movement that we were up against in the 60s. And it has to be dealt with justly or otherwise. And it's dangerous, he said, not because they have guns and not because they practice with them, but because there are so many of them. And because the militia movement is made up of society's average successful citizens. They have to be dealt with intelligently. And that was right before Oklahoma City. That's how the militia movement was dealt with. It was wiped out virtually overnight by a CIA operation.
That's amazing. Could you talk a little bit more about that Phoenix project in Vietnam? What was the actual project?
Phoenix program was an assassination program run by CIA. Bogue Wrights was involved in it. It had other designations too, like B-52 was a name of the assassination program. It was all run by the CIA. Phoenix is kind of the umbrella name for the assassination program. They killed, they admit to killing like over 40,000 people who they tried to explain that they were part of the Viet Cong infrastructure, but turns out, you start investigating it, that most of the victims were just normal Vietnamese people who did not want America to run Vietnam. It wasn't that they were communists or VC or, you know, whatever. They were just normal people that didn't want to cooperate with the Americans. And, of course, to me, there's nothing more dangerous or vicious or sadistic than an American. I mean, we got to face this fact, you know. America is the most violent and sadistic place on Earth. We're the only ones that ever dropped nuclear weapons on people, on civilians. I mean, we wiped out the Indians. We dealt with slavery. Our whole economy was based on slavery. For God's sake, the whole America is a story of land grab. Broken treaties, rotten deals, war. Now it's all based on war and drugs and assassination. That's what we stand for. So I don't have a very high opinion of my own country. I'd like to make it a decent place, but to do so, a lot of vicious people have to be killed. You can call it defense, you call it whatever you want. But the real reality is that a lot of nasty people have to be killed to make this a decent place for one time. Because it's never really been a decent place. You know, in the first 8 years after the revolution, okay, we run to the Articles of Confederation. But as soon as we got that stinking constitution, all that is a seven-part program on how to run a central government. So you could have a central bank. And then we got that private central bank from the Rothschilds right from the get-go. So we got the Constitution, we got the central bank. Well, you have to have a central government to protect the central bank. That's the whole deal. It's so simple. But we're cheated. You know, our schools will never tell us these simple, simple facts. So these people have to be wiped out. They have destroyed the world, and they've done it in our name.
Well, and the fact that we were never told the truth, that we've been hoodwinked about all of history, that gets back to the Jews again, who also control the educational system. And this whole Holocaust thing, you know, we're constantly having to you know, be reminded of the Holocaust, and we have all these Zionist congressional minions that have spent millions and millions of dollars to create Holocaust museums all over this country. And in fact, there was a big to-do mentioned as these Olympics are happening in regards to the fact that some Jewish representative, they wanted to have a moment of silence at the Olympics going on now for the, I'm trying to look at my notes here. I don't remember how many years ago it was that there were some Jewish athletes allegedly killed by Palestinian terrorists. Although, you know, that was probably an inside job as well. That was probably Jews killing Jewish athletes so they could blame it on the Palestinians so that they could cause an outrage. But they wanted to have a moment of silence for this thing that happened like 30, 40 years ago. And the present day Olympic Committee refused to allow them to do that, even though you can see the word Zion in the logo for the Olympics. So they're trying... Yeah, they're constantly trying to make us feel sorry for those poor Zionists when they're behind all the horror and all the destruction. And yes, I agree with you about this country, but the fact is that they have caused it. They have, you know, taken over our government. We have a Zionist-occupied government, and that's why we're in this situation, because none of our representatives had the backbone or the conscience to just say no. No, we are not going to be part of what you're doing. It's not going to happen.
Yep, and that's a function of two basic things. It's a function of Christianity and a function of banking. These two institutions are what keep us under Jewish control. Christianity makes the world safe for Jews, because of the teachings of Jesus, and banking, of course, rips us off and keeps us impoverished. So you bring up the Holocaust, as I've pointed out, and it's a pretty important concept. Germany, Hitler specifically, saved Germany from the Great Depression and the Versailles Dictate by issuing debt-free currency. It was the first time it had ever been done on a wide scale in human history. He kind of copied Abraham Lincoln's greenbacks. Mm-hmm. Lincoln just did it so he could destroy the southern states and the southern people without paying interest. But Hitler said, well, I mean, we could do that too. You know, we could use debt-free currency. We don't have any gold. The Allies stole all our gold. We don't have anything. But we can issue our own currency, can't we? And they did. And within a year and a half, Germany went from being a basket case with starvation to prosperity. And it just got better and better and better. And, of course, the bankers said, no way, babe. This cannot be allowed to be emulated. And Germany had to be destroyed for once and for all because of the issuance of debt-free currency. Now, this is the tip-off for dealing with the libertarians and the Austrian school of economics is exemplified by the LouRockwell.com gang, specifically Tom Woods and Gary North. Now, I've never seen anything as vicious in my life as these two characters and their attacks on Alan Brown and Bill Still, who have recommended that America, you know, that we issue debt-free currency. Because if it worked for Germany under even worse conditions than we have, it would definitely work for us. Now, John F. Kennedy, in April of 1963, he did the same thing. He issued over $4 billion in United States notes. He explained that, well, in the Federal Reserve note and the United States note, neither one of which is backed by gold or silver, but at least we pay no interest to anybody for the United States note. It's the same, you know, it's a no-brainer, in other words. He didn't say that, but it is a no-brainer.
Right.
Why pay money to this private gang of Jews who own the Federal Reserve Corporation? And if you doubt that, just look up Lewis versus the United States, 1982, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decided that announced that the Federal Reserve is a private profit-making corporation. We allow them to issue this fake thing called the Federal Reserve note, and we pay them interest for issuing our own currency. It's a private gang.
Right.
Well, Kennedy said, I don't think so. I don't think we need to be doing that. And he issued $4 billion in U.S. notes. I've got one right looking at me right as I'm talking. Of course, he didn't last long after that. So, I mean, that was a pretty good reason for him being assassinated, plus some other things that he was doing.
Yes,
but it could be done. It could be done again. And overnight, we could have a debt-free currency, and we could become prosperous. That was exactly the way Germany was in the 1930s, virtually overnight.
Right, and that's why we have this big distractor, Ron Paul, who's talking about auditing the Fed. What a joke. We don't need to audit the Fed. It's just, as you said, we have to get rid of the Fed and basically do the same thing that Germany did and have debt-free currency. I mean, how come these people are allowed to just print money out of thin air and then charge us a debt in order to buy it from them? The whole idea is so insane. And even though more and more Americans are realizing this, there's no big, you know, outcry to get rid of this organization. And I think that's why they brought Ron Paul out, so he could distract them and say, no, we got to audit the Fed. No, we got to get rid of the Fed. We don't want the Fed. And if we get rid of them, the debt goes bye-bye. There is no more debt because they invented it.
Yeah, exactly. I think Ron Paul is the biggest phony in America. I mean, you know, he's a likable little guy with a little squeaky voice, but he's a phony. He won't ever, you know, when he questions Bernanke, he doesn't say, hey, aren't you guys privately owned? I mean, aren't you a private profit-making corporation? And that's what the federal court said back in 82. He never said that. It says, well, you know, I don't think you're being very good about your practices. You know, I think you're hurting us with your practices. But, oh, my God. Anyway, what the Holocaust is all about is to discredit the idea of debt-free currency. Because you say, well, I think we should have debt-free currency. Oh, I suppose you want to gas the Jews after that, right? So that's the whole purpose of the Holocaust, why they're keeping it alive, because it must never be known how Hitler saved Germany virtually overnight with debt-free currency. I mean, we can look at our own President Kennedy, what happened to him for doing it. That's how important this is.
Although
that's
there
what
the are
Holocaust
more, did. There are more and more people talking about this. I've done many shows on the Zionists. I know John Kaminsky's talking about the Zionists. There's this young man in Canada. He calls himself Zion Crime Factory. He's done extensive research. There are many people now saying, forget this anti-Semitism crap. You know, we've done the research. We know what's going on. And we have to expose these criminals. Although their MO is extremely genius in its evilness, that they have developed a way to basically state that anybody that reports on their crimes is an anti-Semite rather than an anti-terrorist. You know, your whole Daja idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole thing. It's the Jews have to protect themselves from the truth. It's a terrifying thing to them for the truth to come out. I mean, a little truth is okay, you know, because the rabbis do need to scare their people into coalescing and to staying under the rabbi's control. That's the whole thing. So some anti-Semitism, quote-unquote, I mean, you know, we know that these people are not Semitic.
Right.
Semites are the Arabs. These people are themselves the anti-Semites. But
exactly.
To this genius expression, anti-Semitism, quote-unquote, they're afraid to say anti-Jew because they're afraid that people will say, well, actually, I am anti-Jewish. But anti-Semitism sounds like a congenital mental disease. It has a sinister sound to it. That's the whole reason it's used, because nobody really knows what anti-Semitism means. Very few people are willing to say, well, what is a Semite? Well, actually, the Palestinians are the Semites. The Jews in Palestine are Russians. They have no connection. They have no blood ties They're nothing. It's they're converts to Judaism.
Right.
So
the Khazars,
right? They kill the Semites, and they
right.
take their land, and they steal from them, and torture them, and whatever. You know, they're the anti-Semites. Americans are the anti-Semites. We're the anti-Semites because we are persecuting and killing Semitic peoples. Anyway.
Right. And now we got the Syrian. Now we got the Syrian hoax going on. We know that they've already always got their target over Iran. And I would just like to also mention the ingenious way that they've co-opted Christian churches and coined this idea of Judeo-Christianity. I mean, the whole idea of that is so ridiculous, but in this mind control of religion, they have sucked people into that. You know, the Jews, you know, don't believe in Jesus, Yahweh. They don't believe that the Savior has not yet come, or the Christians don't believe that. In fact, Jesus was not a Jew. He was killed by the Jews, but somehow they've allowed Christianity to be co-opted totally under this umbrella where it's all come into one big stinky mess. We have these high-level Zionist Christians like John Hagee. It's just amazing. Once in a while, I'll watch him until I can't tolerate it anymore. But he's one of the biggest warmongers there are. You know, we got to get rid of these anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic Muslim countries that want to take Israel away from us and things of that nature. They have totally hoodwinked this huge segment of the population who, of course, also has that whole thou shalt not kill. It's funny how thou shalt kill Muslims, but thou shalt not kill the people causing the crimes. You're supposed to turn the other cheek and all of that rot. And I think that's another big way that we've been totally hoodwinked and disarmed.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So that's one thing that I try to do on this show is to wake up those people. Here where I live in North Carolina, part of the Bible Belt, you know, you can't find a church that doesn't have Zion in its name. It's basically all the same stuff. They're all promoting this garbage. In fact, now it's become so insane, they're actually having vaccine clinics in the churches. So they're bringing the people in, getting them to put money in the dish. And, of course, they're always having their little funds to send money to Israel for whatever the purpose may be, while at the same time having them, you know, injected, have their children injected with disease so that they will be maimed for life or killed. And the hoodwinking, and that's why I wanted to do the show on altering the human consciousness, because we have been sucked into this insanity. And even though the average Joe on the street has to smell a rat by this point, how obvious can it be that everything is opposite from what it should be? Nobody's doing a thing about it. They just continue to go to the Olympics or watch the movies or whatever the case may be, any distraction to avoid themselves having to face reality.
Yeah, it's all based on escape from the difficult to describe situation we're in. I mean, it's so confusing to most people; they just can't make heads or tails of it. So they have to escape. So I'm trying to provide a little reality therapy. You know, this last essay that I did, the Jew fighters, was so rough that I don't get any email anymore. I mean, people either realize there's no point in talking about it anymore, you know, there's no reason to communicate with me, which I really don't crave any communication, but it's getting down to it now. We did have a drone visit here the other night, so I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this now with all these thousands of drones they've authorized to use against us, and I'm sure that they will be having weapons on board in the not-too-distant future. So this is warfare, again. We got to figure out who's sending them against us. You know, you can use a shotgun on a drone if it gets down close enough to the ground. When I was in Montana, they were using helicopters against us for intimidation purposes. A guy named Calvin Greenup had an elk ranch not far from us, and Apache attack helicopter came to his place and had a gun under the chin, and it just circled around him with the gun aiming at him the whole time. So when we heard about it, I got on a Denver radio show, said, okay, any more of these helicopter visits, we're going to shoot them down. And the host said, you mean you actually have ways to bring down a helicopter? I said, well, maybe. Of course, we had 50 caliber machine guns. I mean, we had everything we needed. And that was the last helicopter visit we ever got. So that's the kind of way you got to be ready to deal with this threat. They don't want any more Wacos. You got to remember this. That's what our power is. We got to be ready for another Waco at the drop of a hat. Anybody comes to your house, you search your house. You know, if you got a warrant, you got to deal with that. But more and more now, they just bust in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, you got to be met with a lot of lead, a lot of firepower. The only way that we're going to hold on to our dignity long enough to get this thing under control. We're going to be faced with roadblocks. I saw a film yesterday of TSAs in the bus stations in California standing around. Well, I mean, this is war. These guys need to be wiped out. There's no excuse. There's no justification for armed people paid for by us to tell us what to do or to look in our stuff or to us or to threaten us in any way. We got to change this whole chemistry. We got to make them morbidly afraid of us, and it can only be done by shooting them, or whatever, however you want to do it. But that's the easy. That's the American way. I mean, how did we become a country? How did this convert from English colonies, 13 English colonies, into a country through violent revolution? And those were not Americans fighting a foreign government. Those were Englishmen fighting the English government, their own government. And they picked up guns and they shot it out with them. That's how we became free for a little while until the Constitution came in. So
exactly.
That's how we do it again. We got to do the same thing again. It's always just going to be the same method. Never going to change.
Right. And I just want to mention that drones can be any size. I've experienced some very weird, gigantic bees that I've seen on the property that I live on in North Carolina. I think it's an intimidation tactic because it's obvious that they're not bees. But they can come in all shapes and sizes. You know, they've developed all these things. And yes, in fact, we hear even reported on the mainstream media that more and more police departments are now requesting that they have a drone squad. I mean, it's incremental, but it's being stepped up to the point where it's so obvious. You know, we're constantly hearing Janet Napolitano talk about those lone wolves. Well, what is a lone wolf? A lone wolf is actually somebody who's doing what you're saying and saying, we know what's going on and we're not going to take it anymore. And they get labeled as the terrorists. And then they have an excuse to, you know, disarm them or worse. And it's very obvious to me, I figured out this a long time ago, that the two type of people that enter the military are the ones with a conscience who have been hoodwinked to believe that they're actually, you know, serving their country when they're actually serving the Zionists. But then we also have psychopaths who love to kill. And the ones who have post-traumatic stress disorder are the ones who went into the military, saw what was really going on, and having a conscience, they come back and they're having never-ending nightmares and all kinds of things like that. And that's why the military now wants to label those people as PTSD, because the first thing they're going to do to those people is take away their weapons.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because when I went to Montana to help these militia of Montana guys in 94, I only went up there because friend of mine said, well, you know, they're doing something, but basically what you came up with, I said, okay, I'll go up there and help them. And I took a bunch of machine guns and other stuff, and distributed these machine guns to the guys in the militia of Montana, including the Truckmans, who, of course, I didn't know, were working for the FBI and ATF. Well, the FBI and ATF knew very well, obviously, that I provided these machine guns. But they never did a thing. This was a year or so after Waco. And I'm sure that the memory of those eccentric Christians opening up with a bunch of AR-15s is burned indelibly into their little pointed heads, because they knew that I went up there to fight. And I inculcated into these guys up there, who may have been kind of, you know, new to the game, but I quickly got them conditioned and set up with all the guns and ammunition they needed and the plans on how to respond. And believe me, the FBI never said a word to me. They came to my house in 18 months later, long after I got out of the militia deal. I was cowboying in the Bitterroot Valley, moved away from Knoxon. And they knew about the machine guns. These two agents showed up. They came there under false pretenses. I'd been a silent partner in a tire disposal business, and I lost my shirt. So I was on this victim list, and they came to pretending that they were interested in my victimhood. So I went out to the gate to meet them, and one of them held up his FBI badge. J.B. Campbell? I said, yeah. So-and-so, FBI. Okay. I thought, this is it. You know, they finally decided to get me. But no, they were there about this tire deal. Oh, I said, well, yeah, listen, are you guys going to help me get my money back or what? Well, probably not. Yeah. I said, well, I don't need to talk to you then. I mean, the very idea of me talking to the FBI was unbelievable. But they said, well, maybe you could just tell us how this scam went down. Okay, well, ask me a question. Well, could we go inside? It's kind of cold out here. Okay. So I let them sit at my dining room table for 45 minutes. And this one young guy, younger agent, started stammering. I looked at him. I thought, what the hell is this? FBI agent stammering. The older guy just kind of looked at me like an owl through his glasses. Finally, he spoke up, and he started stammering. Uh-oh. I said, this doesn't look good. So finally it was over, and I took him back outside, and the older guy turned to the gate and said, Joe here could have handled this. I just want to come along and meet you. You know, I read your book, and I wanted to see if your ideas have changed. I said, what was your name? Mike. Mike Houck? Yeah. Well, Mike Houck was the FBI agent in charge of the militia.
Wow.
He'd been after me for years. So, of course, I had a 45 on me at the time, and I was at all times ready to shoot it out under any circumstance. I don't give a damn. I mean, that's what I'm there for. I was there to get these guys. I don't care. I call them America's number one terrorist organization.
Yeah.
I said, you guys, you know, you got some stone killers. I said, you did that World Trade Center deal in 93. That was your bomb. I said, you killed those people in Idaho. You killed all those people down in Texas. And I know damn well you blew up the Oklahoma City building. He said, well, I understand the problem. I'm interested in solutions. Mm-hmm. Well, I said, well, read my book. He said, I did read your book. That's a pretty rough book, man. Mm-hmm. Well, you're a pretty rough outfit. I said, we got some stone killers, too. Yeah, he said, I know. I'm hoping that there's a way we can have a dialogue.
Yeah, right.
With me? Well, he said, I'm not sure it would go anywhere, but I thought it was worth a try. I said, well, you know something? I would have to have full disclosure from you to have a dialogue with you. Oh, no, he said, I couldn't do that. I said, I couldn't either. So anyway, it was kind of interesting, but they knew I had 12 machine guns right about 15 feet from where we were standing outside. And they were cool with that. They didn't give a damn. They didn't want any trouble. You know, the guy was curious about me. He wanted to talk to me and let me know that who he was, I guess.
Right. What a joke to try to intimidate you, especially sending the piece of garbage who was involved in trying to shut down the militia to begin with. And then for him to have the nerve to say they want to negotiate. I mean, after you just list just some of the things that they've done, of course, I would have added on to it, you know, covering up for the global pedophile scandal. That's one of my main targets. But the audacity of them thinking that they're going to negotiate with you, what's there to negotiate about? These people are mass murderers. They're committing crimes of humanity. What is there to talk about? And they're knowingly working for this outfit. You know, that makes them aiders and abettors. They are just as guilty as the ones at the top, you know, putting out the orders.
Well, yeah, I mean, you look at the World Trade Center bombing of 1993, for example. I mean, this shows what they are. They had that Egyptian informant, Imad Ali Salem, Egyptian army guy. And they told him to infiltrate this group of angry people. He did. So they find, and of course they didn't know that he was taping every conversation they ever had, secretly. So they said, well, what are these people like? He said, well, they're pretty angry. Uh-huh. Well, do you think they might, bomb something? Well, they don't know how to make a bomb. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you do. What do you mean? Well, I mean, you're an army officer. You know how to make a bomb. Yes. Well, we would like you to make the bomb. Really. And, of course, we'd like you to use phony explosives in it. I see. And then, you provide it to them, and then they place it someplace, and then you tell us, and we arrest them, and then we'll break up the ring. Okay. Well, they met again a month or so later, and they said, this John Antisev, the FBI agent in New York, said, hey, change of plan. What's that? Well, we want you to use real explosives, and we have the explosives that you can use here.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it would be more realistic, and then we literally have something. And that's how the World Trade Center got bombed by the FBI's own bomb, you know. And it was all, I had a guy from Time Magazine call me in 1994, Darby Leone down at Warner Brothers, told him that I knew something about the bombing. So this guy with Time Magazine calls up and says, Darby says you know something about the bombing. I said, yeah, I do. I said, you know where I got it? He said, where? I said, from the New York Times. What? Yeah. Page 43, and I gave him the date. The New York Times has the whole taped, what do you call it, version of these conversations between Salem and Antisev. My God, I had no idea. How'd I miss that? I said, well, it's on page 43. You know, that's how you missed it. It should have been on page one. That was the FBI's, and they were willing to blow up the one tower of the World Trade Center, and if it had been placed properly, the idea was it could have broken the central spine and tipped the one tower into the second tower and brought them both down. And how many people were inside? No, 50,000. I don't even know how many people were inside. But that's what the FBI planned. That's the kind of organization that's why I call it America's number one terrorist organization. So, you know, like you say, what's the point of trying to talk to these people? None.
Exactly. And like I said, it just boggles my mind, especially this young guy that was like blinking his eyes or whatever he was doing, to be standing there with you, you know, one of America's greatest heroes, and hearing what you're saying, and if not before then, at least at that point, knowing what group he's actually working for, that's what amazes me, is how do these people go home to their families at night, and their children ask them, you know, what did you do today, Daddy? you know, what do they answer their children? Obviously, they have to lie to them. But, you know, all I can say is they must be on massive doses of sleeping pills and things of that nature. If they have a conscience, just to sleep, or perhaps they intentionally look for the ones that don't have a conscience. Because from what I've learned, a lot of the standardized testing that has to be taken by people to get into different colleges and organizations, and I'm sure especially the FBI and CIA, they have developed ways of finding the psychopaths within the people that are applying.
Yeah, I know. I don't know how you even describe this mentality that we're up against exactly. I mean, the Jewish thing is kind of easy to understand once you understand the Jewish mentality. But these middlemen, these Gentiles that get into the FBI and the CIA and they do these nasty, horrible, mass murdering things. I don't know how to explain it, but I just know they have to be wiped out because they have betrayed humanity. You know, how about the guy that dropped the bombs on the Japanese civilians? I mean, where do you get these people?
I know.
I just don't know. I don't know. But I know they have to be eliminated because they represent mass murder on a scale that's unimaginable. Where do they get these scientists that create these diseases? I mean, dicking around with the 1918 flu and trying to recreate that, and they've done it? I mean, what the hell? People have to be wiped out. They can't have due process because the law will protect them. The law is part of our problem.
Exactly. I totally agree with you. And there are so many of them. We have 1,300 biowarfare labs just in the United States alone. And it's getting worse every day. They're getting ready now to unleash this bird flu virus as well, which will, you know, cause a pandemic once the idiot people line up to get the bird flu vaccine, which will give them the bird flu. And, of course, this is part of their depopulation agenda as well. But, you know, it's done in the name of health. You know, and I would put Bill Gates on your list as well, because this monster, you know, is spending billions of dollars to create vaccines and genetically modified food for the rest of us as part of his depopulation agenda. Of course, his father being involved in the eugenics movement, you know, before he even came along. So when you actually study these things outside of history taught by the Jew schools, you find out all the different dots that can be connected. And there's a big list of them, no question. But there's no way they can be transformed. Like, there's no treatment for a psychopath. You can't give them a conscience. It's not possible. So I look at them as like parasites. If you have a parasite in your GI tract, you do not try to save it so that you can, you know, teach it to live on its own. You have to get rid of it, no question.
Yeah, and even these cancer doctors, the oncologists, I mean, how many people have they condemned to miserable deaths with their witchcraft, their chemistry and surgery, and oh my God, radiation. I mean, imagine the things they've done to people.
Right.
100 years ago, they did what? They cut off what?
Right. Yeah, and actually one of the most amazing new things, because they're constantly coming up with new things to do to torment and abuse the people. Now this whole idea of clinical trials, and you even see this advertised on television, which I do watch just so I can see how they're hoodwinking the sheep. And they're now promoting people sign up with clinical trials. Oh, do you have this symptom or that disease? You know, call this number. You know, you will get free medical care and you'll be given an experimental drug and paid for your time. You know, they try to make it like you will be contributing to science and you will be paid for your time. Meanwhile, you're taking a toxic poison that they don't know the side effects of, how bad it's going to be. That's why they're recruiting you in the first place. and yet people sign up for this stuff. But that's another whole level to this monstrosity of what medicine has become.
Yeah, there was one encouraging thing that happened recently over in Germany. The judge announced that circumcision in a certain part of Germany would be outlawed as barbaric. Of course, the Jews went ballistic, said that, well, this represents the end of Judaism. I think there's been some modification, you know, since then to accommodate these rabbis. But that was encouraging because at least it showed this relationship between child, mutilation and the Jewish mentality.
Right. Yes, as a matter of fact, I've done many shows on circumcision. This causes trauma at the cellular level of the child. This is involved in men eventually having hatred feelings towards women because, you know, psychologically it's like my own mother didn't save me from this trauma because these children feel it. They know what's going on. Then we had the Jewish rabbi in Brooklyn because in these ultra-Orthodox communities, the moil, actually, after he cuts off the foreskin with his cigar snipper thing, actually performs fellatio on the newborn. And this one particular rabbi had herpes and actually gave herpes to the baby who then died. But an interesting new situation involving circumcision, which I just heard yesterday. I was listening to C-SPAN while I was working on my computer. And we had, the witch Hillary Clinton at the International AIDS Conference, and now one of the new things they're promoting for people in developing countries to prevent, to allegedly prevent AIDS, is to get all the young boys circumcised. So this is so ridiculous, you know, but this is, they're adding circumcision to the list of things to do to prevent AIDS.
Yeah, you know, I'm convinced that circumcision made me very timid as a little kid. I just kind of figured out that it affected me pretty profoundly. And until I became a little older, I, you know, started to assert myself. But I think the circumcision was a terrible shock to my system.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a mutilation, just like you said. I mean, and who came up with this in the first place? The whole idea is so ridiculous. And, of course, you know, in Africa, these monsters have promoted even female mutilation as well. It's just horrific. And yet, you know, there's no outcry by America that we must stop these things, although perhaps occasionally they'll come up with something. But all in all, it's all allowed to go on because the whole idea of trauma and suffering, these monsters are psychic vampires. They feed off this energy. They love it when the whole, all of humanity is suffering. As a matter of fact, I always read, or on a regular basis, the last sentence of the 10th Protocol of Zion, which says, it is indispensable to trouble in all countries the people's relations with their government so as to utterly exhaust humanity with starvation, envy, torture, bunch of other stuff, and then the inoculation of diseases is in capital letters. And in that one sentence, they have put forward their agenda. And so if you're anti that, to me, that is working for good. Because, you know, if that's what a Semite is, somebody who promotes that stuff, then they are snakes in our midst.
Yeah, we have to understand the protocols. It's just a tough read, and it's very demoralizing. You know, the fellow who translated the British Museum, Victor Marsden, only worked on them for about an hour a day because they were so demoralizing. And I mean, there's something so dreadful about the protocols. You can only take so much, but as you say, you have to understand what's in them. It's just a very difficult proposition to deal with.
Especially when all of the Zionists are saying, oh, it's all a cartoon and, you know, it's fake. Excuse me, but everything in there is happening as we speak. So how can it be fake? It's basically their agenda put into, you know, our face so we will know what they're up to. And I don't know anything about this Victor Marsden. Obviously, he did this for Services of Truth. Do you have any info on him?
Oh, yeah. He was with the, he was a newspaper journalist. The London Morning Post, I think. I'm not sure. I've forgotten it over the years. But Professor Nilus in Russia somehow got them out of Russia. And, of course, he was killed for that. And Marsden was presented with them, and then they were kept in the British Museum. And he translated them, I think, from French into English. And as I say, it was so disturbing, especially in those days when people just hadn't been exposed to such things. He could only stand them for a short period each day. He finally finished the translation. He went on a round-the-world cruise with one of the members of the British royalty, one of the princes, but he died on the cruise. So I think he was poisoned. I myself was poisoned, you know, twice during this Harry Reid, excuse me, this Harry Reid deal I was in Las Vegas. And I was finally told by an ex-CIA guy that it was definitely the Mossad. My wife, Robbie, knew it was the Mossad, and she said, those six Jews over there, those are Israelis, and they're watching you all the time. I said, well, why would they watch me? You know, I just couldn't quite get it. I didn't understand the Mossad method for killing. I thought, well, you know, you just need one guy. You don't need six guys or seven guys. But they do. That's their way. They need 24 guys. You know, the more the merrier on an assassination. And they put the poison on my steering wheel three times, and the first two times they got me, but the third time Robbie was with me, and I said, look, there it is, they've done it again. And there was this grease all over the steering wheel, and I was informed that it was a combination of petroleum jelly, Datura, which is Jimson weed extract, and DMSO, which takes it right into your bloodstream.
Right.
And it did. It really wrecked me for a long time. So I'm lucky I'm still here. Now that we know how they got Arafat, you know, they got him with polonium, supposedly, maybe. It was a matter of time. If they want to get you, they can get you. So I'm just saying we got to get them. We just can't wait around. I'll get them at the drop of a hat. They know it. I'm ready at any given time.
Exactly, and I just want to point out, because this is so important, and that's why they're afraid of you. And I've stated on my show many times, come and get me, I'm ready for you. And if you do kill me, I go on vacation. I have absolutely no fear, because they've made my life a living hell, so I don't care what they do. And it's funny how there's really not been too many things going on lately, except for the occasional gigantic bumblebee flying around, you know, following me when I'm in my garden or whatever, which I laugh at. But I'm trying to get people to realize if you stand up, they will be afraid of you. They are not used to having people confront them. And that's what we have to do. And another last thing, because we're almost out of time, I wanted to mention another excellent thing that you included in your latest essay, The Jew Fighters, on your blog that I was not aware of. Let's see here. You say, as revealed by the FBI agent who got close to Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, Obama's terrorist mentors, Ayers and Dorn are communists following the Communist Party line, which is Jewish. And that was like, wow, that was an aha moment for me. You know, the communists are actually Jewish. So they have morphed themselves into so many different arenas. And then sometimes they'll pit one arena against another when, in fact, it all has the same monster mommy. And you say that the agent Larry Grathwall reports that Obama's friends believe that at least 25 million Americans would have to be killed, the ones who wouldn't be converted to communism after being confined to concentration camps in the Southwest. And then you also mentioned that over 40% of the U.S. Armed Forces have answered yes when asked if they would shoot Americans who wouldn't surrender their guns. That's mind-boggling to me. But those were very important.
Yeah, that was that famous questionnaire done at the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey back in, I think it was 94. And it was asking, you know, most of the 46 questions, most of them had to do with United Nations control of the military. Would you take orders from somebody that's not an American? But the number 46 question was, if America, if the Constitution or the Bill of Rights was modified and gun ownership was made illegal, and some Americans refused to comply, would you be willing to shoot them to disarm them? And that's when 43%, at least, of the Marines and the Army, overall, they said yes, they would be willing. So there is that. We got to keep that in mind.
Which is so mind-boggling. You see, if I had been ignorant enough to go in and think, oh, I'm going to serve my country, and they gave me that questionnaire, when I came to that question, I would say, uh-oh, I think I better get out of here, you know. It's just amazing that they didn't do so. But then again, I know that's because they're being mind-controlled as well. But that makes them extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
Well. Okay, well, we're almost out of time. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Bruce is going to try to be on the show at least once a month as he continues to write his outstanding essays. And as things get more and more obvious, because it's unfolding all the time, you know, they're basically taking off their masks and showing us who they are. So let me know when you can be on next. I like to do shows with you on Sunday because there's no commercials and we can just keep on going. But is there anything closing that you would like to mention to the listeners? Anything that you haven't said that you would like to say? You know, to me, you are like basically the person who's going to get the manhood back into the men. And please help do that some more. What else can you say?
Well, I thank you for that. That's my plan, is to get American men, especially, to be more manly and to accept their responsibilities to protect women and children. I mean, that's our role in life. And it's been taken away from us through mind control. So I think it can be retrieved, but it's going to take a little shift, a big shift, I should say, in our thinking.
So have you had any personal experience with anybody that you're associated with that you've said certain things or done certain things to help enlighten them, you know, other than write your blog and talk to them about true history? Is there anything else? Well, of course, they can avoid synthetic estrogens like plastics and pesticides and, you know, stop allowing themselves to be distracted by movies and the games and all the rest of it. Is there anything else that men should be doing? Well, one thing that drives me crazy, let me just mention this, as I said, I live here in the Bible Belt, and they have all these Christian seminars for Christian men. And all the Christian men meet, but the Christian men aren't talking about stopping what's going on in the world because, you know, apparently in Revelations it says that, you know, this is God's will. We have to go through all these terrible things, which are all be caused by the Jews. We just have to allow it to happen. So I don't really know what goes on in these Christian men's meetings, but it certainly isn't, you know, talking about how to stop the monsters that are causing the problem.
Absolutely not. And I was going to answer you by saying that the thing I would be pointing to, the contribution I've made besides the militia idea, which, you know, I did that for a certain reason. I didn't like the name of the thing, but my main contribution, I think, is to get men out of this Christian mind control. That's really what is critical. They have to reject this Jewish, what I call it, Judaism for Gentiles. Christianity is a form of Judaism for us, and we have to reject it totally. It has to be seen as the enemy's mind control system. But, you know, that's a tall order, but that's I think, the first step to protecting ourselves is rejecting Christianity.
And I know a lot of listeners will have a problem with that. I've done a lot of shows on religion, trying to get the question answered, you know, why is God allowing this evil? I haven't gotten the answer yet. But in my opinion, if pure evil isn't controlling the world, it has to be eradicated, just like a virus, just like a parasite. It's got to go. And if God's not going to help do it, then I think we have to do it. And that's how I feel. It's pure common sense. If somebody's destroying you and taking everything you own, then why are you going to allow them to continue? Because your church tells them, yeah, well, we love Israel, and that's how it works.
Yeah, it turns men into Stepford husbands, you know. That's what it does. It makes the world safe for Judaism, and it's what's kept the Jews from being wiped out.
Exactly.
It's his whole purpose. That's the purpose of Christianity, is to protect the Jews, because Jesus said, don't do anything like that, you know. Turn
right.
your cheek and forgive your enemies and love your enemies. Oh, nonsense.
Right. Okay, well, that's a perfect point at which to end the show. I want to thank you so much for being my guest. We'll talk to you again in about a month. Give my regards to Robbie, and keep on doing what you're doing, because you're one of my heroes, and I'm just glad to know you're out there. And I don't let myself get discouraged, because I do see a massive awakening. There's no question that people are getting it. But now it's time to do something about it.
Right. Well, thank you, Rebecca.
Okay, thank you, Bruce, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.